tormenting me. But to be fair, I did sleep with her husband. As I'm snapping photographs of the bread, I notice a heavy-set man with gray hair watching me from the other end of the aisle. He's not even being subtle about it. I shoot him a look, and he backs off, thank God. I can't deal with a stalker on top of everything else. As I wait for Nina to contemplate the bread a little further, I let my mind wander. As usual, it wanders to Andrew Winchester. After Nina's revelation that I'd been in prison, Andrew never found me to talk like he said he would. He has been effectively scared off. I can't blame him. I like Andrew. No, I don't just like him. I'm in love with him. I think about him all the time, and it's painful to share a home with him and not be able to act on my feelings for him. Moreover, he deserves better than Nina. I could make him happy. I could even give him a baby like he wants. And let's face it, anything is better than her. But even though he knows we have a connection, nothing will ever happen. He knows I went to prison. He doesn't want an ex-convict, and he's going to keep on being miserable with that witch, probably for the rest of his life. My phone buzzes again. Any French bread? It takes another 10 minutes, but I manage to find a loaf of bread that meets Nina's expectations. As I roll my shopping cart to the checkout, I notice that heavyset guy again. He definitely is staring at me. And more unsettlingly, he doesn't have a shopping cart. So what exactly is he doing? I check out as quickly as I possibly can. I load the paper bags filled with groceries back into my shopping cart so I can push it out into the parking lot to my Nissan. It's only as I'm getting close to the exit that a hand closes around my shoulder. I lift my head, and that heavyset man is standing over me. "Excuse me," I try to jerk away, but he holds tight to my arm. My right hand balls into a fist. At least a bunch of people are watching us, so I have witnesses. "What do you think you're doing?" He points to a small ID badge hanging from the collar of his blue dress shirt, which I hadn't noticed before.
"I'm supermarket security. Can you come with me, miss?"
I'm going to be sick. It's bad enough I spent almost 90 minutes in this place shopping for a handful of items. But now I'm being arrested? For what? "What's wrong?" I gulp. We have attracted a crowd. I notice a couple of women from the school pickup who I'm sure will gleefully report back to Nina that they saw her housekeeper being apprehended by supermarket security.
"Please come with me," the guy says again.
I push my cart with us because I'm scared to leave it behind. There are over $200 worth of groceries in there, and I'm sure Nina would make me pay for all of them if they were lost or stolen. I follow the man into a small office with a scratched-up wooden desk and two plastic chairs set up in front of it. The man gestures for me to sit down, so I settle down in one of the chairs, which creaks threateningly under my weight. This has got to be a mistake. I look at the man's ID badge. His name is Paul Dorsey. "What's this about, Mr. Dorsey?" He frowns at me as his jowls hang down.
"A customer alerted me that you were stealing items from the supermarket."
I let out a gasp. "I would never do that."
"Maybe not."
He sticks his thumb into the loop of his belt.
"But I have to investigate. Can I see your receipt, please, Miss
Calloway?" I dig around in my purse until I come up with a crumpled strip of paper. "Here."
"Just a warning," he says. "We prosecute all shoplifters."
I sit in a plastic chair, my cheeks burning, while the security guard painstakingly looks through all my purchases and matches them up with what's in the cart. My stomach churns as I consider the horrible possibility that maybe the clerk didn't ring something up properly and he'll think I stole it. And then what? They prosecute all shoplifters. That means that they'll call the police. And that would be a violation of my parole for sure. It hits me that this would work out pretty well for Nina. She would get rid of me without having to be the mean person who fired me. She would also get some pretty sweet revenge on me for having slept with her husband. Of course, it's a little harsh to be sent to jail for adultery, but I get the feeling Nina may look at it differently. But that can't happen. I didn't steal anything from the grocery store. He's not going to find anything in that cart that isn't on my receipt. Is he? I watch him scrutinizing the strip of paper as the tub of pistachio ice cream in my cart likely turns to liquid. My heart is pounding in my chest, and I can hardly breathe. I don't want to go back to jail. I don't. I can't. I'd rather kill myself.
Well, he finally says, everything seems to match up.
I almost burst into tears. Right, of course. He grunts.
I'm sorry to bother you like that, Miss Calloway, but we have a lot of problems with shoplifters, so I had to take it seriously. And I got a phone call alerting me that a customer matching your description might be planning to take something.
A phone call? Who would call the grocery store and describe what I look like and tell the security guard I was planning to steal something? Who would do such a thing? I can only think of one person who would do something like that.
Anyway, he says, thanks for your patience. You can go now.
Those are the four most beautiful words in the English language. You can go now. I get to leave this grocery store with my hands free, pushing my shopping cart. I get to go home. This time. But I have a terrible feeling this isn't the end of it. Nina has more in store for me.
Chapter 32.
I can't sleep. It's been 3 days since I was nearly apprehended at the grocery store. I don't know what to do next. Nina has been pleasant enough, so maybe she feels like I've learned my lesson about who is boss in this house. Maybe she isn't trying to send me to jail. But that's not the reason I'm tossing and turning. The truth is, I can't stop thinking about Andrew. That night we spent together. The way I feel when I'm with him. I've never felt this way before. And until Nina dropped the bombshell about my past, he felt the same way. I could tell. But not anymore. Now he thinks I'm nothing but a common criminal. I kick the blankets off my legs. It's stiflingly hot in my room, even at night. If only I could open that stupid window. But I doubt Nina is going to do anything to make me feel more comfortable here. I finally wander downstairs to the kitchen. I have that mini fridge in my room, but I don't have much food in it. It's too small to fit much. Those three mini water bottles Nina left me are nearly all that's in there, still untouched. As I'm walking to the kitchen, I notice the light is on for the back porch. I frown and approach the back door. That's when I realize there's a reason the light is on. Somebody is out there. It's Andrew. Sitting all alone in one of the chairs out there, drinking from a bottle of beer. I quietly slide open the back door. Andrew blinks up at me in surprise, but he doesn't say anything. He just takes another swig from his bottle of beer. Hey, I say.
Hey,
he says. I squeeze my hands together. Can I sit here?
Sure. Knock yourself out.
I step out onto the cold wooden planks on the porch and lower myself into the seat next to his, wishing I had a beer as well. He doesn't even look at me. He just keeps drinking from his beer bottle, staring out into the huge backyard. I want to explain. I clear my throat. I mean, why I didn't tell you about...
You don't have to explain.
He glances in my direction, then back down at his beer.
It's pretty obvious why you didn't tell me.
I wanted to.
That's not true. I didn't want to tell him.
I didn't want him to ever know, even though that was entirely unrealistic.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
He swishes the beer around in his bottle.
So, what were you in prison for?
I really, really wish I had a beer. I open my mouth, but before I can figure out what to tell him, he says,
"Forget it. I don't want to know. It's none of my business."
I chew on my lip.
"Look, I'm sorry I didn't tell you. I wanted to try to put the past behind me. I didn't mean any harm."
"Yeah."
And I stare down at my hands in my lap. "I was embarrassed. I didn't want you to think less of me. Your opinion means a lot to me."
He rolls his head to look at me, his eyes soft under the dim porch light.
"Millie, I also want you to know," I take a deep breath, "I had a really great time the other night. It was one of the best nights I've ever had, because of you. So whatever else happens, thank you for that. I just had to tell you that."
There's a crease between his eyebrows.
"I had a great time, too. I haven't felt that happy in—"
he pinches the bridge of his nose.
"A while. I hadn't even realized it."
We stare at each other for a moment. There's still electricity between us. I can see in his eyes that he feels it, too. He glances at the back door, and before I know what's happening, his lips are on mine. He kisses me for what feels like an eternity, but it's probably more like 60 seconds. When he pulls away, there's regret in his eyes.
"I can't."
"I know. It's not meant to be between us, for so many reasons. But if he wanted to go for it, I would do it. Even if it meant making an enemy out of Nina. I would risk it. For him." But instead, I get up and leave him behind on the porch with his beer. The wood of the stairs is cold against my bare feet as I walk back up to the second floor. My head is still spinning from that kiss, and my lips are tingling. That can't be the last time. It can't. I saw the way he was looking at me. He has real feelings for me. Even though he knows my past, he still likes me. The only problem is... wait, what's that? I freeze at the top of the stairs. There is a shadow in the hallway. I squint at it, trying to make out the image in the darkness. And then it moves. I let out a screech and nearly go toppling down the stairs. I grab onto the banister and save myself at the last second. The shadow shifts closer to me, and now I can see what it is. It's Nina.
"Nina,"
I gasp.
Why is she standing there in the hallway? Was she downstairs? Did she see me and Andrew kissing?
"Hello, Millie."
It's dark in the hallway, but the whites of her eyes almost seem to be glowing.
What are you doing here?"
She scowls at me, the light from the moon creating disturbing shadows on her face.
"It's my home. I don't have to account for my whereabouts."
Of course, it's not really her home. Andrew owns the house. And if they weren't married, she couldn't live here. If he decided to choose me over her, this would be my house. These thoughts are insane. Obviously, that isn't going to happen. "I'm sorry." She folds her arms across her chest.
"What are you doing here?"
I came down to get a glass of water."
"Don't you have water in your room?"
"I drank it all," I lie. And I'm sure she knows it's a lie, considering she snoops in my room. She's silent for a moment.
"Andy wasn't in bed. Did you see him downstairs anywhere?"
I think he was out on the back porch."
"I see.
But I'm not sure. I didn't talk to him or anything." Nina gives me a look like she doesn't believe one word I'm saying. Which is fair enough, since it's all lies.
"I'll go check on him.
And I'll head up to my room." She nods and pushes past me, jostling my shoulder. My heart is pounding. I can't push away the feeling that I've made a terrible mistake crossing Nina Winchester. Yet, I can't seem to stop myself.
Chapter 33.
I have Sunday off, so I spend the day out of the house. It's a beautiful summer day, not too hot, not too cool. So I drive over to the local park and sit on a bench and read my book. When you're in prison, you forget those simple pleasures, just going outside and reading at the park. Sometimes you want it so bad, it's physically painful. I'm never going back there. Never. I grab a bite to eat at a fast food drive-thru, then I drive back to the house. The Winchester estate is really beautiful. Even though I'm starting to despise Nina, I can't hate that house. It's a beautiful house. I park on the street like always and walk up to the front door of the house. The sky has been darkening during my entire drive home, and just as I get to the door, the clouds break open and droplets of rain cascade out of the sky. I wrench the door open and slip inside before I get drenched. When I get into the living room, Nina is sitting on the sofa in semi-darkness. She's not doing anything there. She's not reading. She's not watching TV. She's just sitting there. And when I open the door, her eyes snap to attention. "Nina," I say, "everything okay?"
"Not really."
She glances over at the other end of the sofa, and now I notice she's got a stack of clothing next to her. It's the same clothing that she insisted I take from her when I first started working here.
"What is my clothing doing in your room?"
I stare at her as a flash of lightning brightens the room. "What? What are you talking about? You gave me those clothes."
"I gave them to you."
She lets out a barking laugh that echoes through the room, only partially drowned out by the crack of thunder.
"Why would I give my maid clothing worth thousands of dollars?"
"You..." My legs tremble beneath me. "You said they were too small on you. You insisted that I take them."
"How could you lie like that?"
She takes a step toward me, her blue eyes like ice.
"You stole my clothing. You're a thief."
"No." I reach out for something before my legs give out under me, but I grasp only air. "I would never do that."
"Ha!"
She snorts.
"That's what I get for trusting a convict to work in my home."
She's loud enough that Andrew hears the commotion. He dashes out of his office, and I see his handsome face at the top of the stairs, lit by another bolt of lightning. Oh God, what is he going to think of me? It's bad enough that he knows about my prison record. I don't want him to think I stole from his own house. "Nina?" He takes the stairs down two at a time.
"What's going on here?" "I'll tell you what's going on,"
she announces triumphantly.
"Millie here has been stealing from my closet. She stole all this clothing from me. I found it in her closet."
Andrew's eyes slowly grow wide.
"She..."
"I didn't steal anything." Tears prick at my eyes. "I swear to you, Nina gave me those clothes. She said they didn't fit her."
"As if we would believe your lies,"
she sneers at me.
"I should call the police on you. Do you know what this clothing is worth?"
"No, please don't."
"Oh, right."
Nina laughs at the expression on my face.
"You're on parole, aren't you? Something like this would send you right back to prison."
Andrew was looking down at the clothing on the couch, a deep crease between his eyebrows.
"Nina." "I'm going to call them."
Nina whips her phone out of her purse.
"God knows what else she stole from us, right, Andy?"
"Nina." He lifts his eyes from the stack of clothing.
"Millie didn't steal this clothing. I remember you emptying your closet. You put it all in trash bags and said you were donating it."
He picks up a tiny white dress.
"You haven't been able to fit into this in years."
It's gratifying the way Nina's cheeks turn pink.
"What are you saying? That I'm too fat?
He ignores her remark. I'm saying there's no way she stole this from you. Why are you doing this to her?
Her mouth falls open.
Andy!
Andrew looks over at me, hovering by the sofa.
Millie.
His voice is gentle when he says my name.
Would you go upstairs and give us some privacy? I need to talk to Nina.
Yes, of course.
I agree. Gladly.
The two of them stand there in silence while I mount the flight of stairs to the second floor. When I reach the top, I go over to the doorway to the attic and I open the door. For a moment, I stand there, contemplating my next move. Then I close the door without going through. Much quieter this time, I creep over to the head of the stairs. I stand at the edge of the hallway just before the stairwell. I can't see Nina and Andrew, but I can hear their voices. It's wrong to eavesdrop, but I can't help myself. After all, this conversation will almost certainly involve Nina's accusations about me. I hope Andrew continues to defend me, even when I'm out of the room. Will she convince him that I stole her clothes? I am, after all, a convict. You make one mistake in life, and nobody ever trusts you again.
Didn't take these dresses, Andrew was saying. I know she didn't.
How could you take her side over mine?
Nina shoots back.
The girl was in prison. You can't trust somebody like that. She's a liar and a thief, and she probably deserves to be back in prison.
How could you say something like that? Millie has been wonderful.
Yes, I'm sure you think so.
When did you become so cruel, Nina?
His voice trembles.
You've changed. You're a different person now.
Everyone changes.
She spits at him.
No.
His voice lowers so that I have to strain to hear it over the sound of raindrops falling outside and hitting the pavement.
Not like you. I don't even recognize you anymore. You're not the same person I fell in love with.
There's a long silence, broken by a bolt of thunder that cracks loud enough to shake the foundations of the house. Once it's faded, I hear Nina's next words loud and clear.
What are you saying, Andy?
I'm saying, I don't think I'm in love with you anymore, Nina. I think we should separate.
You're not in love with me anymore?
She bursts out.
How can you say that?
I'm sorry. I was just going along with things, living our lives, and I didn't even realize how unhappy I was.
Nina is quiet for a long time as she absorbs his words.
Does this have to do with Millie?
I hold my breath, waiting to hear his answer. There was something between us that night in New York, but I'm not going to kid myself that he's leaving Nina because of me.
This isn't about Millie, he finally says.
Really? So are you going to lie to my face and pretend nothing ever happened between you and her?
Damn. She knows, or at least she thinks she knows. I have feelings for Millie,
he says in a voice so quiet, I'm sure I must have imagined it. How could this rich, handsome, married man have feelings for me?
But that's not what this is about. This is about you and me. I don't love you anymore.
This is bullshit!
The pitch of Nina's voice is going up to the point where soon only dogs will be able to hear her.
You're leaving me for our maid? This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. This is an embarrassment to you. You're better than this, Andrew.
Nina, his tone is firm. It's over. I'm sorry.
Sorry?
Another crack of thunder shakes the floorboards.
Oh, you don't know what sorry is.
There's a pause.
Excuse me?
If you try to go through with this,
she growls at him,
I will destroy you in court. I will make sure you are left penniless and homeless.
Homeless? This is my home, Nina. I bought it before we even knew each other. I allow you to stay here.
We have a prenup, as you recall, and after our marriage ends, it will be mine again.
He pauses again.
And now, I'd like you to leave. I hazard a look around the stairwell. If I crouch, I can make out Nina standing in the center of the living room, her face pale. Her mouth opens and closes like a fish.
You can't be serious about this, Andy,
she sputters.
I am very serious.
But,
she clutches her chest.
What about Cece?
Cece is your daughter. You never wanted me to adopt her.
It sounds like she's speaking through gritted teeth.
Oh, I see what this is about. It's because I can't have another baby. You want somebody younger who can give you a child. I'm not good enough anymore.
That's not what this is about,
he says. Although on some level, maybe it is. Andrew does want another child, and he can't have that with Nina. Her voice trembles.
Andy, please don't do this to me. Don't humiliate me this way. Please.
I'd like you to leave, Nina, right now.
But it's raining.
Andrew's voice doesn't waver.
Pack a bag and get out.
I can almost hear her weighing her options. Whatever else I can say about Nina Winchester, she's not stupid. Finally, her shoulders sag.
Fine. I'll leave.
Nina's footsteps thud in the direction of the stairs. It occurs to me a second too late that I need to move out of sight. Nina lifts her eyes and sees me standing at the top of the stairs. Her eyes burn with anger like nothing I've ever seen. I should run back to my room, but my legs feel frozen as her heels bite into the steps one by one. The lightning flashes one last time when she reaches the top of the stairs, and the glow on her face makes her look like she's standing at the gates of hell. My lips feel numb. It's almost hard to form the words. Do you need help packing? There's such venom in her eyes, I'm afraid she's going to reach into my chest and yank my heart out with her bare hands.
Do I need help packing? No, I believe I can manage.
Nina goes into her bedroom, slamming the door behind her. I'm not sure what to do. I could go up to the attic, but then I look downstairs where Andrew is still in the living room. He's looking up at me. So I descend the stairs to talk to him.
I'm so sorry.
My words come out in a rush.
I didn't mean to.
Don't you dare blame yourself, he says. This was a long time coming.
I glance at the window, which is drenched with rain.
Do you want me to go?
No, he says.
I want you to stay.
He touches my arm, and a tingle goes through me. All I can think is that I want him to kiss me, but he can't do it right now, not with Nina right upstairs. But soon she'll be gone.
About 10 minutes later, Nina comes down the stairs, struggling with a bag on each shoulder. Yesterday, she would have made me carry those and laughed at how weak I was. Now she has to do it herself. When I look up at her, her eyes are puffy and her hair is disheveled. She looks terrible. I don't think I realized exactly how old she was until this moment.
Please don't do this, Andy,
she begs him.
Please.
A muscle twitches in his jaw. The thunder cracks again, but it's softer than it was before. The storm is moving away.
I'll help you put your bags in the car.
She chokes back a sob.
Don't bother.
She trudges over to the door to the garage that's just off the side of the living room, struggling with her heavy bags. Andrew tries to reach out to help her, but she shrugs him away. She fumbles to get the door open to the garage. Instead of putting her bags down, she's trying to juggle them both and get the door open. It takes her several minutes, and I finally can't stand it anymore. I sprint over to the door, and before she can stop me, I turn the knob and throw it open for her.
Gee, she says. Thanks so much.
I don't know how to respond. I just stand there as she pushes past me with her bags. Just before she goes through the door, she leans in close to me, so close that I can feel her hot breath on my neck.
"I will never forget this, Millie,"
she hisses in my ear. My heart flutters in my chest. Her words echo in my ears as she tosses her bags into the back of her white Lexus and then zooms out of the garage. She left the garage door open. I can see the rain pouring down onto the driveway as a gust of wind whips me in the face. I stand there for a moment, watching Nina's car disappear into the distance. I nearly jump when an arm encircles my shoulders. Of course, it's just Andrew.
"Are you okay?"
he asks me. He's so wonderful. After that miserable scene, he's considerate enough to ask me how I'm doing. "I'm okay. How about you?" He sighs.
"That could have gone better. But it had to be like that. I couldn't keep living that way. I didn't love her anymore."
I look back out at the garage. "Is she going to be okay? Where is she going to stay?" He waves a hand.
"She's got a credit card. She'll just get a hotel room. Don't worry about Nina."
Except I am worried about Nina. I'm very worried about Nina, but not in the way he thinks. He lets go of my shoulders to hit the button to close the garage door. He grabs my hand to pull me away, but I keep watching the garage door until it closes completely, certain Nina's car will reappear at the last moment.
"Come on, Millie."
There's a glint in Andrew's eyes.
"I've been waiting to get you alone."
Despite everything, I smile. "You have?"
"You have no idea."
He pulls me in for a kiss, and as I melt against him, the thunder cracks once again. I imagine I can still hear Nina's car engine in the distance, but that's impossible. She's gone. For good.
Chapter 34.
I wake up the next morning in the guest bedroom, with Andrew asleep beside me. After Nina left last night, this is where we ended up. I didn't want to sleep in his bed, where Nina had been sleeping just the night before, and my cot upstairs was not very comfortable for two bodies. So this was the compromise. I suppose if we continue like this, if things become more serious between us, I'll eventually have to sleep in the master bedroom. But not yet. It still smells like Nina in there. Her stench clings to everything. Andrew's eyes crack open, and a smile spreads across his face when he sees me lying there beside him.
"Well, hello," he says.
"Hello yourself." He runs a finger down my neck and over my shoulder, and my whole body tingles.
"I love waking up next to you, instead of her."
I feel the same way. I hope I get to wake up next to him tomorrow, and the morning after. Nina didn't appreciate this man, but I do. She took her life for granted. It's crazy to think that now it will be mine. He leans in and kisses me on the nose.
"I better get up. I have to get to a meeting."
I struggle to sit up in bed. "I'll make you breakfast."
"Don't even think about it."
He climbs out of bed, the blankets falling from his perfect body. He's in really good shape. He must work out.
"You've been getting up and making breakfast for us every single day since you've been here. Today, you sleep in and do whatever you want."
"I usually do the laundry on Mondays. I don't mind running a load and..."
"No."
He gives me a look.
"Look, I don't know exactly how to work this all out, but I really like you. I want to give you and me a real try. And if we're going to do that, you can't be my maid. I'll find somebody else to clean and you can hang out here until you figure out what you want to do next."
My cheeks flush. "It's not that easy for me. You know I have a record. People don't want to hire someone who..."
"That's why you can stay here as long as you want."
He holds up a hand to cut off my protests.
"I mean it. I love having you here. And who knows? Maybe it'll end up being, you know, a permanent thing.
He gives me this sweet, charming smile, and I just melt. Nina had to be insane to let this guy get away. I'm still scared she's going to want him back. I watch Andrew thread his muscular legs through his boxer shorts, although I pretend not to be watching. He winks at me one last time. Then he leaves the room to take a shower, and I'm all alone. I let out a yawn, stretching out in this luxurious double bed. I was thrilled when I got the cot upstairs, but this is on another level. I didn't even realize I had been walking around with a crick in my back, but after one night on this mattress, it feels better. A girl could get used to this. I had abandoned my phone on the nightstand next to the bed, but now it starts buzzing with a phone call. I reach for it and frown at the message on the screen. Blocked number. My stomach fills with butterflies. Who is calling me at this hour of the morning? I stare at the screen until the phone goes silent again. Well, that was one way to deal with it. I drop my phone back down on the nightstand and snuggle up back in the bed. It's not just the mattress that's comfortable. The sheets feel like I'm sleeping on a bed of silk, and the blanket is warm yet somehow light. So much better than the itchy woolen thing I've been sleeping under upstairs. And that awful scrawny blanket I had at the prison. Nice, expensive blankets feel good. Who knew? My eyes start to drift shut again. But just before I fall asleep, my phone starts ringing yet again. I groan and reach out for my phone. Once again, it has the same message. Blocked number. Who could be calling me? I don't have any friends. Cecilia's school has my number, but school is out for the summer. The only person who ever calls me is Nina. Well, if it's her, she's the last person I want to talk to right now. I press the red button to reject the call, but there's no way I'm falling asleep again. So I get out of bed and go upstairs to take a shower. When I get downstairs, Andrew is already wearing his suit and sipping on a mug of coffee. I run my fingers self-consciously over my jeans, feeling incredibly underdressed compared with him. He's standing by the window, looking out at the front yard, his lips turned down. "Everything okay?" I ask. He jolts, surprised by my presence. He smiles. "Yeah, fine. It's just... that goddamn landscaper is out there again. What the hell is he doing all the time out there?" I join him at the window. Enzo is bent over a flower bed, a spade in his hand. "Gardening?" He looks down at his watch. "It's 8 in the morning. He's always here. There are a dozen other families he works for. Why is he always here?" I shrug, but truthfully, he has a point. It does seem like Enzo is in our yard a lot. A disproportionate amount of time, even considering how much larger our yard is than many of the others. Andrew seems to make his mind up about something, and he puts his coffee cup down on the windowsill. I reach for it, knowing Nina will have an absolute fit if she sees a ring of coffee on the windowsill. But then I stop myself. Nina isn't going to give me a hard time anymore. I don't ever have to see her again. I can leave coffee cups wherever I want from now on. Andrew strides into the front lawn, a determined expression on his face, and I follow him out of curiosity. Obviously, he's planning to say something to Enzo. He clears his throat 2 times, but it's not enough to get Enzo's attention. Finally, he snaps, "Enzo!" Enzo very slowly lifts his head and turns around.
"Yes. I want to talk to you."
Enzo lets out a long sigh and gets back on his feet. He ambles over to us, going as slow as humanly possible.
"Hey, what you want?"
Listen, Andrew is tall, but Enzo is taller, and he has to lift his head to look at him.
"Thank you for all your help here, but we don't need you anymore. So please just get your things
and go to your next job.
Che cosa?
Enzo says. Andrew's lips set into a straight line.
I said,
we don't need you. Done. Finished. You can leave. Enzo's head tilts to the side.
Fired.
Andrew sucks in a breath. Yes, fired. Enzo contemplates this for a moment. I take a step back, aware that as strong and muscular as Andrew is, Enzo has him beat by a mile. If the two of them were in a fight, I don't even think it would be a close call. But then he just shrugs.
Okay,
Enzo says.
I go.
He seems to care so little about the whole thing that I wonder if Andrew feels silly for having made a big deal out of him working here so often. But Andrew nods, relieved.
Grazie.
I appreciate your help the last few years. Enzo just stares at him blankly. Andrew mutters something under his breath and turns around to go back into the house. I start to follow him. But just as Andrew disappears through the front door, something restrains me. It takes me a second to realize that Enzo has grabbed my arm. I turn around to look at him. His expression has completely changed since Andrew went back into the house. His dark eyes are wide as they stare into mine.
Mili, he breathes, you must get out of here. You are in terrible danger.
My mouth falls open. Not only because of what he said, but how he said it. Since I've been working here, he hasn't managed to string together more than a couple of English words. And now he said two entire sentences? And not just that, but the Italian accent that is usually so thick that I can barely understand him is far more subtle. It's the accent of a man who is very comfortable with the English language.
I'm okay, I say. Nina is gone. No.
He shakes his head firmly, his fingers still wrapped around my arm.
You are wrong. She is not...
Before he can get any other words out, the front door to the house swings open again. Enzo quickly releases my arm and backs away.
Millie?
Andrew pokes his head out the front door.
Everything okay?
Fine. I manage.
You coming back inside?
I want to stay out here and ask Enzo what exactly he meant by his ominous warning and what he was trying to tell me. But I have to go back inside the house. I don't have a choice. As I follow Andrew through the front door, I look back at Enzo, who has made himself busy gathering his equipment. He doesn't even look up at me. It's almost like I imagined the entire thing. Except when I look down at my arm. I can see the angry red marks his fingers left behind.
Chapter 35.
Andrew told me that I shouldn't be doing any work for the house, but Monday, I usually go grocery shopping, and we're low on a lot of supplies. And after I flip through a few books I pulled out of the bookcase and watch a little TV, I'm itching for something else to do with myself. Unlike Nina. I like keeping busy. I have been meticulously avoiding the grocery store where that security guard tried to apprehend me. Instead, I go to a different grocery store in another part of town. They're all the same, anyway. The best part is pushing my cart around the store and not having to follow Nina's stupid, pretentious grocery list. I can buy whatever I want. If I want to get brioche bread, I'll get brioche. And if I want to get sourdough, I'll get that. I don't have to send her 100 pictures of every kind of bread. It's so liberating. While I'm looking through the dairy aisle, my phone rings inside my purse. Again, I get that unsettled feeling. Who could be calling me? Maybe it's Andrew. I reach into my purse and pull out the phone. Again, there's that blocked number. Whoever called me this morning is trying to call me again.
Millie, is it?
I nearly jump out of my skin. I look up, and it's one of those women Nina had over for her PTA meeting. I can't remember her name. She's pushing her own shopping cart, and she's got a phony smile on her plump, painted lips.
Yes,
I say.
I'm Patrice,
she says.
You're Nina's girl, right?
I bristle at the label she gave me. Nina's girl. Wow. Wait till she finds out that Andrew dumped Nina and she's going to be screwed over in the divorce thanks to the prenup. Wait till she finds out that I am Andrew Winchester's new girlfriend. Soon, maybe I'll be the one she has to suck up to. I work for the Winchesters, I say stiffly, but not for long.
Oh, good.
Her smile broadens.
I've been trying to get in touch with Nina all morning. She and I were supposed to get together for brunch. We always have brunch Monday and Thursday at Kristen's Diner, but she never showed up. Is everything okay?
Yes, I lie. Everything is fine. Patrice purses her lips.
I guess she must have just forgotten then. You know, Nina can be a bit flaky, I'm sure.
Oh, she's a lot more than that. But I keep my mouth shut. Her eyes fall on the phone in my hand.
Is that the phone Nina gave you to use?
Yeah, it is. She throws her head back and laughs.
I have to say, it's nice of you to let her keep track of where you are at all times. I don't know if I would be okay with that if I were you.
I shrug. She mostly just texts me. It's not that bad.
That's not what I mean.
She nods at the phone.
I'm talking about the tracking app she installed. Doesn't it drive you crazy that she wants to know where you are all the time?
I feel like I got sucker punched in the stomach. Nina tracks me on my phone? What the hell? I'm so stupid. Of course she would do something like that. It makes perfect sense. And now I realize that she didn't have to go through my purse to find that playbill or call the house the night of the show. She knew exactly where I was.
Oh.
Patrice clasps a hand over her mouth.
I'm so sorry. Did you not realize?
I want to slap her across her Botoxed face. I'm not sure whether she knew that I knew about it or not, but she looks like she's taking great pleasure in being the one to tell me. A cold sweat breaks out in the back of my neck. Excuse me, I say to Patrice. I push past her, leaving my grocery cart behind. I race out into the parking lot, and I can only breathe again when I'm out of the store. I put my hands on my knees and lean forward until my breathing returns to normal. When I straighten up again, a car is making a quick exit from the parking lot. I recognize the white Lexus. It looks like Nina's car. And then, my phone starts to ring again. I rip it out of my purse. Again, it says blocked number. Fine. If she wants to talk to me, she can go ahead and say what she wants to say. If she wants to threaten me and call me a homewrecker, let her do it. I jab at the green button. Hello? Nina? Hello. A cheerful voice says, it's come to our attention that your vehicle warranty may have recently expired. I pull the phone away from my ear and stare at it in disbelief. It wasn't Nina after all. It was a stupid spam caller. I just completely overreacted to the entire thing. But I still can't push away the feeling that I'm in danger.
Chapter 36
Andrew is stuck at work tonight. He sent me a regretful text at 6:45.
Problem at work. I'm stuck here at least another hour. Eat without me.
I texted back. No problem. Drive safely. But inside, I was reeling with disappointment. I had so much fun having dinner in Manhattan with Andrew, and I had been attempting to recreate one of the meals we had at that French restaurant. Steak au poivre. I used black peppercorns that I picked up at the supermarket after I worked up the nerve to go back in. Minced shallot, cognac, red wine, beef broth, and heavy whipping cream. The smell was incredible, but it wasn't going to keep for another hour or two. Steak just isn't the same reheated. I had no choice but to eat my magnificent dinner all alone. And now it's sitting in my stomach like a rock, while I flick through stations of the television.
I don't like being in this house alone. When Andrew is here, it feels like his house, which it is. But when he's not here, the whole place reeks of Nina. Her perfume emanates from every crack and crevice. She's marked her territory with her scent like an animal. Even though Andrew told me not to, I did a deep clean of the house after my shopping trip, trying to get rid of her perfume. But I can still smell it. As obnoxious as Patrice was in the supermarket, she did me one big favor. Nina was tracking me. I found the tracking app hidden in a random folder somewhere I never would have seen it. I deleted it immediately. But I still can't shake the feeling that she's watching me. I close my eyes and I think of the warning Enzo gave me this morning. You must get out of here. You are in terrible danger. He was afraid of Nina. I could see it in his eyes when he and I were talking and she passed within earshot. You are in terrible danger. I push away a wave of nausea. She's gone now. But maybe she could still hurt me. The sun has gone down, and when I look out the window, all I can see is my reflection. I stand up from the sofa and walk over to the window, my heart pounding. I press my forehead against the cool glass, peering into the dark outside. Is that a car parked outside the gates? I squint into the darkness, trying to figure out if I'm just imagining things. I suppose I could go outside and get a closer look, but that would involve unlocking the doors to the house. Of course, what's the difference if the door is unlocked when Nina has a key? My thoughts are interrupted by the sound of my phone ringing on the coffee table. I hurry over to grab it before I miss the call and frown when I find another blocked number on the screen. I shake my head. Another spam call, just what I need. I press the green button to accept the call, expecting to hear that obnoxious recorded voice, but instead, I hear a distorted, mechanical voice. Stay away from Andrew Winchester. I suck in a breath. Nina? I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, much less whether it was Nina. Then there's a click on the other line. It's gone dead. I swallow. I've had enough of Nina's games. Starting tomorrow, I'm taking back this house. I'm calling a locksmith to change the locks on the doors. And tonight, I'm spending the night in the master bedroom. Enough of this guest bedroom bullshit. I'm not a guest here anymore. Andrew said he wanted this to become permanent. So now, this is my home too. I head for the stairs, taking them two at a time. I keep going until I get up to the stuffy room in the attic, my bedroom. Except it won't be my bedroom after tonight. I'm packing everything up and moving downstairs. This will be my last time in this claustrophobic little room, with the weird lock on the outside of the door. I grab one of my pieces of luggage out of the closet. I start throwing clothing inside, not bothering to be too careful, given that I'm just carrying it down one flight of stairs. Of course, I'll have to ask Andrew's permission before I clean out a drawer downstairs, but he can't expect me to live up here anymore. It's inhuman. This room is like some sort of torture chamber. Millie, what are you doing? The voice from behind me nearly gives me a heart attack. I clutch my chest and turn around. Andrew, I didn't hear you come in. His gaze darts over my luggage. What are you doing? I shove the handful of bras I was holding into the luggage. Well, I thought I might move downstairs. Oh. Is that okay? I feel suddenly awkward. I'd assumed Andrew would be fine with it, but maybe I shouldn't have made that assumption. He takes a step toward me. I bite down on my lip until it hurts. Of course it's okay. I was going to suggest it myself, but I wasn't sure if you would want to. My shoulders sag. I definitely want to. I had kind of a rough day. What have you been up to? I saw some of my books on the coffee table. Have you been reading? I wish that's all I had been doing today. Honestly, I don't want to talk about it.
He takes another step closer and reaches out to trace my jaw with the tip of his finger.
Maybe I could make you forget about it.
I shiver at his touch.
I bet you could. And he does.
Chapter 37. Despite how incredibly uncomfortable my cot is compared with the incredible mattress in the guest room, I pass out soon after Andrew and I make love up there, wrapped tightly in his arms. I never thought I would be having sex in this room, especially since Nina was so strict about letting me have any guests over. That rule certainly didn't work out too well for her. I wake up again at around 3 in the morning. The first sensation I become aware of is my bladder, full and slightly uncomfortable. I've got to hit the bathroom. Usually, I go right before bed, but Andrew wore me out, and I fell asleep before I could muster up the energy. And that's the other sensation I become aware of, the sense of emptiness. Andrew isn't in the cot anymore. I suspect after I fell asleep, he decided to relocate to his own bed. I can't blame him. This cot is hardly comfortable for one person, much less two, and the room is so claustrophobic. Maybe he tried to tough it out, but after tossing and turning, he migrated downstairs. Andrew is more than 10 years older than me, and my back can barely make it through the night with this mattress, so I can hardly blame him. I'm so glad this is the last night I'll be sleeping here. Maybe after I use the bathroom, I'll go join Andrew downstairs. I rise to my feet, the floorboards groaning under my weight. I make my way to the door and turn the doorknob. As usual, it sticks, so I turn it more firmly. It still doesn't turn. Panic mounts in my chest. I press myself against the door, the scratch marks in the wood splintering into my shoulder, and place my right hand squarely on the knob. I try once again to turn it clockwise, but it doesn't budge. Not even a millimeter. And that's when I realize what's going on. The door isn't stuck. It's locked. Part 2. Chapter 38. Nina.
If a few months ago someone had told me I would be spending tonight in a hotel room while Andy was at my house with another woman, the maid, I wouldn't have believed it. But here I am, dressed in a terry cloth bathrobe I found in the closet, stretched out in the queen-sized hotel bed. The television is on, but I'm barely aware of it. I've got my phone out, and I click on the app I've been using for the last several months. Find My Friends. I wait for it to tell me the location of Wilhelmina Millie Calloway. But under her name, it says, location not found. The same as it has since the afternoon. She must have figured out I was tracking her and disabled the app. Smart girl. But not smart enough. I pick up my purse from where I put it down on the nightstand. I dig around inside until I find the one paper photograph I have of Andy. It's a few years old, a copy of the photographs he had professionally taken for the company website, and he gave me one of them. I stare into his deep brown eyes on the shiny piece of paper, his perfect mahogany hair, the hint of a cleft in his strong chin. Andy is the most handsome man I've ever known in real life. I fell half in love with him the first moment I saw him. And then I find one other object inside my purse and drop it into the pocket of my robe. I get up off the queen-size bed, my feet sinking into the plush carpet of the hotel room. This room is costing Andy's credit card a fortune, but that's okay. I won't be here long. I go into the bathroom, and I hold up the photograph of Andy's smiling face. Then I pull out the contents of my pocket. It's a lighter. I flick the starter until a yellow flame shoots out of it.
I hold the flickering light to the edge of the photograph until it catches. I watch my husband's handsome face turn brown and disintegrate until the sink is full of ashes. And I smile. My first real smile in almost 8 years. I can't believe I finally got rid of that asshole.
How to Get Rid of Your Sadistic Evil Husband, A Guide, by Nina Winchester. Step 1. Get knocked up by a drunken one-night stand, drop out of school, and take a crappy job to pay the bills.
My boss, Andrew Winchester, is ever so dreamy. He's not actually my boss. He's more like my boss's boss's boss. There may be a few other layers in there of people in the chain between him, the CEO of this company since his father's retirement, and me, a receptionist. So when I'm sitting at my desk outside my actual boss's office and I admire him from afar, it's not like I'm crushing on an actual man. It's more like admiring a famous actor at a movie premiere or possibly even a painting at the Fine Arts Museum, especially since I have zero room in my life for a date, much less a boyfriend. He is just so good-looking, though. All that money, and also so handsome. It would say something about life just being unfair if the guy wasn't so nice. Like, for example, when he went in to talk to my own boss, a guy at least 20 years his senior named Stuart Lynch, who clearly resents being bossed around by a guy who he calls the kid, Andrew Winchester stopped at my desk and smiled at me and called me by name. He said, "Hello, Nina. How are you today?" Obviously, he doesn't know who I am. He just read my name off my desk. But still, it was nice that he made the effort. I liked hearing my ordinary four-letter name on his tongue. Andrew and Stuart have been in his office talking for about half an hour. Stuart instructed me not to leave while Mr. Winchester was in there, because he might need me to fetch some data from the computer. I can't quite figure out what Stuart does, because I do all his work. But that's fine. I don't mind, as long as I get my paychecks and my health insurance. Cecilia and I need a place to live, and the pediatrician says there's a set of shots she requires next month for diseases she doesn't even have. But what I mind a little more is that Stuart didn't warn me he was going to ask me to wait around. I'm supposed to be pumping now. My breasts are full and aching with milk, straining at the clips of my flimsy nursing bra. I'm trying my best not to think about Cece, because if I do, the milk will almost certainly burst through my nipples. And that's just not the kind of thing you want to happen when you're sitting at your desk. Cece is with my neighbor Elena right now. Elena is also a single mother, so we trade babysitting duties. My hours are more regular, and she works evening shifts at a bar. So I take Teddy for her, and she takes Cece for me. We're making it work. Barely. I miss Cece when I'm at work. I think about her all the time. I had always fantasized that when I had a baby, I would be able to stay home for at least the first 6 months. Instead, I just took my 2 weeks of vacation and went right back to work, even though it still sort of hurt to walk. They would have allowed me 12 weeks off, but the other 10 would have been unpaid. Who could afford 10 weeks unpaid? Certainly not me. Sometimes Elena resents her son for what she gave up for him. I was in graduate school when I got that positive pregnancy test, leisurely working on a PhD in English as I lived in semi-poverty. It hit me when I saw those two blue lines that my eternal graduate school lifestyle would never provide for me and my unborn child. The next day, I quit, and I started pounding the pavement, looking for something to pay the bills. This isn't my dream job. Far from it. But the salary is decent, the benefits are great, and the hours are steady and not too long. And I was told there's room for advancement,
eventually. But right now, I just have to get through the next 20 minutes without my breasts leaking. I'm this close to running off to the bathroom with my little pumping backpack and my tiny little milk bottles when Stuart's voice crackles out of the intercom.
"Nina," he barks at me, "could you bring in the Grady data?"
"Yes, sir, right away." I get on my computer and load up the files he wants. Then I hit print. It's about 50 pages worth of data, and I sit there tapping my toes against the ground, watching the printer spit out each page. When the final page finishes printing, I yank out the sheets of paper and hurry over to his office. I crack open the door.
"Mr. Lynch, sir?"
"Come in, Nina." I let the door swing the rest of the way open. Right away, I notice both men are staring at me. A nod in that appreciative way I used to get at bars before I got knocked up and my whole life changed. They're looking at me like I've got a giant spider hanging off my hair, and I don't even know it. I'm about to ask them what the hell both of them are staring at when I look down and figure it out. I leaked. And I didn't just leak. I squirted milk out like the office cow. There are two huge circles around each of my nipples, and a few droplets of milk are trickling down my blouse. I want to crawl under a desk and die.
"Nina," Stuart cries, "get yourself cleaned up."
"Right," I say quickly. I'm so sorry. I drop the papers on Stuart's desk and hurry out of the office as fast as I can. I grab my coat to hide my blouse, all the while blinking back tears. I'm not even sure what I'm more upset about. The fact that my boss's boss's boss saw me lactating, or all the milk I just wasted. I take my pump to the bathroom, plug it in, and relieve the pressure in my breasts. Despite my embarrassment, it feels so good to empty all that milk. Maybe better than sex. Not that I remember what sex feels like. The last time was that stupid, stupid one-night stand that got me into this situation to begin with. I fill two entire 5-ounce bottles and stick them in my bag with an ice pack. I'll put it in the refrigerator until it's time to go home. Right now, I've got to get back to my desk and leave my coat on for the rest of the afternoon because I have recently discovered that even if it dries, milk leaves a stain. When I crack open the door to the bathroom, I'm shocked to see someone standing there. And not just anyone. It's Andrew Winchester, my boss's boss's boss. His fist is raised in the air, poised to knock on the door. His eyes widen when he sees me.
Hi, I say. The men's room is, over there. I feel stupid saying that. I mean, this is his company. Also, there's a stencil of a woman with a dress on the door to the bathroom. He should realize this is the women's room.
"Actually," he says, "I was looking for you."
"For me?"
He nods. "I wanted to see if you were okay."
"I'm fine." I try to smile, hiding my humiliation from earlier. "It's just milk."
"I know, but..." He frowns.
"Stuart was a jerk to you. That was unacceptable."
"Yeah, well..." I'm tempted to tell him of 100 other instances when Stuart was a jerk to me. But it's a bad idea to talk shit about my boss.
"It's fine. Anyway, I was just about to grab some lunch, so..."
"Me too."
He arches an eyebrow. "Care to join me?"
Of course I say yes. Even if he wasn't my boss's boss's boss, I would have said yes. He's gorgeous, for starters. I love his smile, the crinkling around his eyes, and the hint of a cleft in his chin. But it's not like he's asking me out on a date. He just feels bad because of what happened before in Stuart's office. Probably someone from HR told him to do it to smooth things over. I follow Andrew Winchester downstairs to the lobby of the building that he owns. I assume he's going to take me to one of the many fancy restaurants in the neighborhood, so I'm shocked when he leads me over to the hot dog cart right outside the building and joins the line. "Best hot dogs in the city," he winks at me.
What do you like on yours?
Mustard, I guess.
When we get to the front of the line, he orders 2 hot dogs, both with mustard.